obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Welcome to the 54th Annual Southern California Convention. My name is Johnny Harrison. I'm an alcoholic. Will you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept, courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'd like to invite one of my oldest and dearest friends to read the fifth chapter for us, Ray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description to the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after made clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
And I'd ask another dear friend of mine, Todd, to read the 12 traditions.
Hello, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Todd. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for a group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants that do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every mind has placed principles before personalities.
Well, the subject I've been assigned this evening, this morning, was acceptance is the key, which I found out is the theme of the 54th Southern California AA Convention. Amazing about all this kind of stuff is that it's a constant subject or situation in my life where I have to accept the seemingly unacceptable in my life. I was sitting there listening to Larry talk, and I love him, he's like a son, and I was thinking about 56 years ago this morning on the fourth day of October, 1959. I was residing at a place where I was very familiar with, called a state penitentiary. And I had been a ward of the state of California since I was 12 or 13 years old at that time. And I had just got thrown out or kicked out of San Quentin State Penitentiary because I was too corrupt to live in a maximum security penitentiary. And their idea was to transfer me to a compulsory rehabilitation institution where they could do something besides give me a lobotomy. And I had no idea in my lifetime that in one short month, I would be introduced to a bunch of people who would change my life, who would present to me a program of attraction that I would have died and went to hell for a piece of the ribbon that it was wrapped in. I had no concept of that. I had no way of knowing, because I was thoroughly convinced 56 years ago this morning that I was going to do what the therapist and the psychiatrist and the sociologist and the criminologist had been telling me for the 20 years I'd been a ward of the state of California. That I was going to die in an institution. I was going to die from an overdose. I was going to be killed in a gang fight, or the police were going to shoot me. If you tell somebody that long enough from the time they're 10 or 11 years old until they're 27, 28 years old, they'll believe you, and it'll come to be a past. I've come to realize that what I was doing that day in that penitentiary, hanging around my little gang, was I was just waiting for one of those things to happen. Because I resigned a long time ago, my last time out, that I had killed me with my unlimited funds and my connections in the world. I'd had 2 years of doing whatever I wanted to do to me, as long as I wanted to do it to me, with as much money as I needed to do it with, and I had accepted that fact. And I'm in this bed, in deathbed in the Los Angeles County Jail, and the doctors tell me I'm going to die, which seemed like a great idea to me. Because I don't want to go on doing this no more. And I don't have any alternative. Because the rings are sitting across the table, there's a desk from people in straight jackets, and sitting there listening to my fate being handed out to me by people who are supposed to know things. And I don't know that, so I When the man told me I was going to die, this seemed like a great relief for me. But after a period of waking up or staying awake night after night and laying in that bed and waiting for it to happen, I don't know what I was waiting for. Somewhere in the darkest moment of my life, I just said, oh, God, help me. I mean, it was the only prayer I'd ever remember saying in my life. And there was no booming flash of lightning or none of this kind of stuff. I wasn't given the AA book, and nobody come running down the hall with an AA meeting saying, come going. I went to sleep, and I slept and got better. From that prayer, this morning, I can see the pathway that led me right to you. It's unaided. There's no way in God's world I could get from where I was that day in my deathbed to riding in a car with somebody I loved for 2 or 3 hours yesterday and walking into a room full of people that I'm just crazy about. Being surrounded by a host of friends that I've learned to love and care for more than anything in the world. And sitting down at a table next to my sponsor, around a host of people that I know and love. And I say, how did this happen? I was sitting there thinking about listening to Larry talk. I said, how did all this happen? There's no reason in God's world that I had ever done anything prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous that would allow me to live the way I live today. To allow me to feel the way I feel today about people like you. To be willing to do whatever it takes here to maintain and obtain my acceptance of the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, is changing right in front of my eyes. I didn't understand it for a long, long time. Because, you see, I was schooled in Alcoholics Anonymous by some of the more practical people in Alcoholics Anonymous who would take none of my nonsense. And as I walked along this pathway of life in Alcoholics Anonymous, this day in November the 4th, 1959, when I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't come here to get sober. I was sober. But that was my enemy. My enemy was not getting loaded. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The day I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sitting on the yard of this penitentiary with my gang waiting for the connection to come off the visiting room so we could get loaded again. That's what we did. You know, Larry talked about sitting around waiting for something to happen. We just all, that's what you do in the penitentiary. I don't know what you do in high places of learning and all this kind of stuff, but that's what you do in the penitentiary. You sit around and wait for something to happen. Wait for something. I know, death, somebody to die, somebody to get loaded, somebody to get shot trying to escape. That's what you do in the penitentiary. And you got a great attorney going for you. It's called day and night. You get enough of those things and they always let you go. And I walked across the yard and followed a group of people into an old Quonset hut of a building, not knowing where I was, not knowing that the hand of God had been laid on me in that deathbed in the Los Angeles County Jail, brought me to that moment in the time and space that I would be engulfed into a way of living that was beyond any kind of wild imagination whatsoever. I didn't have the slide. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. And when the guy told me, and I said, what is this? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried to hunch down. I tried to get out of there. I went, where the local, the big gangbanger. He's, man, yeah. I got all this image that I've been protecting my life with. And I don't want to be seen in a room with a bunch of winos. You know, that's... just sick, I don't know. So I do what people like me do when I don't understand anything. I mimic it and make fun of it. You know, people would sit up there and say things. I'd laugh at them and make fun and ask them, don't you have anything better to do on Sunday than drive 100 miles up these old back roads? Look at some people in cages. What's wrong with you, anyhow? That's what I'd say to myself. I didn't have enough gumption to walk up to him and say, I said to some guy one day, I said, what do you get out of coming up here, anyhow? He says, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. One of the deep AA questions you get around here, you know, all this riddle stuff that they give you. You know. And what he said is, you know, really the truth. Well, you can answer the question of why people sacrifice their time and their energy and their money to carry this magnificent program of recovery into Alcoholics Anonymous and to the alcoholic who still suffers. When you can answer those kind of questions, you don't have to ask them because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. My old sponsor, Norm, used to have a great saying, what you are speaks so loud I can't hear a word you say. And it's really true. One of my great tragedies in Alcoholics Anonymous is to watch people right smack dab in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and still looking for something. Still trying to find that extra step to go, that extra step to take, that extra plateau to reach here or something. I don't know what it is. And my old sponsor used to say to me, the highest you get around here, Johnny, is sober. You get any higher than that, you got to leave. You know, I didn't know that. I mean, these people taught me about it. A man told me, man, you know, I hate to think about it. All these people that were so very important to me when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous are dead now. I looked at that list of the chairman of the Southern California Convention, and they got more deceased people here than we got at the Pacific Group, for Christ's sake. I mean, Jesus, the list is this high. You know, funny thing, I knew them all. That's the amazing thing. Now it's getting to the point, people come up to me for years and say, do you know, you've been sober longer than I've been alive? And I used to kind of take that as a little compliment, but it's twisting now. Now they're coming up to me and say things like, do you know, you've been sober longer than my parents have been alive? God, I hope I don't make grandparents. Yeah. It's kind of hard if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous to comprehend what's here, because there's people who've been here for years that don't understand what's here. My Papa Chuck used to talk a great deal about if you could see this thing in its entirety, it would blind you. It'd be like looking into the sun. There's never an end to it here. My life seems to get better all the time. Now, I'm not talking about monetarily. I'm not talking about financially. I'm not talking about education. I'm not talking about accomplishments, for God's sake. I'm talking about the comfort and joy of realizing what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. To watch what happens to people who buy this thing. My sponsor, Norm, used to talk about it. He'd say, come in here and buy the whole package. And just go out there and spend the day just being yourself. The sad part about it is that none of us come here knowing what ourselves are. We're so many masquerades, so many walls we've hid behind, so many things we've tried to accomplish, and all the things we want to do, that we don't have a chance to find out who we are. That we're just God's kids. That's all. I mean, one of us is, we all are. And we have to uncover this and discover it. It's just a matter of, you know, my papa's book, you know, a new pair of glasses. You know, Reverend Shoemaker told him, Chuck, a long, long time ago, he says, hey, it's just like buying a new pair of glasses. I see things today I never saw before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I never saw this. I didn't recognize it because it was not my experience. I did not experience this complete takeover of my life, this feeling of joy, the belief in a God, to be able to really deeply love somebody, care for them, and want only the best for them. Only the best. And be willing to sacrifice maybe my friendship with them so they can achieve the best. See, it's not a matter of walking. My sponsor loved me so much, he didn't care about my feelings. He was trying so hard to save. But you know, it was not new to me. This idea of living a day at a time was never new to me. I joined a gang in juvenile hall when I was 11 years old. And it was a day-to-day basis on survival. And now I've come to understand that I've accepted the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous to me is a day-to-day survival. That what I am is 50-some-odd years a survivor of alcoholism. The illness of alcoholism. This deadly spiritual malady that eats people alive from the inside out. It destroys families and circumstances and people. It gets to the point when it's so debilitating, this illness that I have, when there's no other answer for, when alcohol ceases to work, and AA does not seem to have the answer for them, or they're so blind and so far gone that they cannot reach out for this power here, that they have to take their own lives. That's what alcoholism is. That's what exactly what it is. And I was given great teachers. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I came out of penitentiary in 1961 after spending 2 years studying our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, while in the penitentiary, and applying the principles that the book addresses that I apply. It didn't forewarn me of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It did not throw me into a mass because I'm one of these type of people who are not social. I'm kind of anti-social, really want to know the truth. Daryl called it a stare. That's what it is. And so when I came out of the penitentiary, I was told that Norm told me that he was going to be my sponsor. And he took me into an area that the book cannot describe. It took me into a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that became the greatest pleasure in my life to be able to serve. By serving Alcoholics Anonymous in my years in Alcoholics Anonymous, in any capacity that I've been asked to serve it in, not volunteering for anything, but whatever you ask me to do, I'll do it. I can't possibly describe to a newcomer sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous what my life has become. And there's nothing special about me. You know, I'm just some little boot and shoe street bum who spent his life in and out of institutions involved in gangs that were murderous and far more deadly than you'll ever read in a newspaper about. And that was my life when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never dreamed that, you know, I'd be sitting in a room last night with 1,000 people and know most of them. I never dreamed that I would be sitting in this room and properly watch everybody in that room come to Alcoholics Anonymous and watch them get sober. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very close to an old lady by the name of Myrtle Snyder who used to come to the penitentiary to visit me. And once upon a time, I went to the parole board and they told me again I couldn't go home, and a day or two before the parole board, my wife had let me know that she had taken my infant daughter back to the Midwest somewhere, and she was running off with a cowboy singer. Now, you can do a lot of things in me, but don't be running off with no cowboy singer. I mean, you know, I'm Puerto Loco. El Capitano. Yeah, oh, come on. And I'm not dead, man. I'm true, you know. So I make up my mind that day, because I'd already committed myself to being the guest or the host for these people when they came into the penitentiary these days. I'd meet them at the gate, you know, walk down and get the catcalls from the gang. Hey, Whittle, what's going on, dude? Nah, just playing games. You know how you got to keep it going, whatever it is. And this particular day, I wasn't doing very well. I was sitting in the front row where I wasn't supposed to sit. I'm trying to get them to send me back to San Quentin. If you want to know what I want to do, I'm going to go back there and play dominoes. That's something to really look forward to, folks, I tell you that. And I'm just down. I mean, I can't go home. You know, I'm never going to be able to see my child. I never saw her anyhow. It didn't make any difference. But all these things are coming down. And you've been telling me, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been listening to you religiously, that when you come to AA, things get better for you. Yeah, people start to take on a new meaning for you. They start to understand something's happened to you. They can watch what's happened to you. Even though it ain't happening, they know it's going to be better. Now, I just got told by the parole board that I can't go home. I'll be back next year, they said. I've been told by this woman who's the mother of my child that I was never going to be able to see this child, and she was running off with a cowboy singer. How much worse can that? See, I want to tell you, you're a bunch of phonies. You're like all the rest of them sing-song people who come to the jail with the little blue lips and sang songs to Jesus to it, through the mirror, and then went home. I wanted to tell you that. And I was getting ready to do that. I was getting ready to get up in front of my convict buddies in the May meeting and denounce you in front of all these people. But I sat in the front row of that meeting and I held this old lady's hand. And while I'm holding on to her hand, she's saying things to me like, honey, everything seems to happen for a reason. And what she said, that makes so much sense, it seemed like to me that when I was holding her hand, I knew that everything was going to be okay. It's the infusion of one alcoholic to another. Everything is going to be okay. I knew that. But I also was powerful enough to know that when I let go of her hand, it would be gone because it was not mine. That I hadn't done anything to deserve this moment of grace. And so I said, sir, what was it? What was it I felt? She said, sweetheart, you'll understand one of these days what it is to feel the unmedicated love of God transferred to you through another human being. That was Sunday morning a long time ago. I felt it already. I felt it when we said the prayer. One of my big fallacies with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is they don't end the prayers properly. They don't say amen and shut up. They seem to have to try to carry it on somewhere. So when I came out of that penitentiary, I ran into this guy by the name of Norm Alpe, who I'd met in the penitentiary. He met there on a panel. See, in my day, Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't a multitude of social events where people go to one every weekend and consider it Alcoholics Anonymous. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous in my day had to go to where the meetings were. They had to go to where the newcomers were. They had to come to the penitentiaries at their own expense because there was no money in the treatment of alcoholism in those days. The charlatans hadn't come out of their dwells yet. They hadn't done out it. Every bent fender in the world around. I became a counselor when the money came in. And so I don't know. I know Norm. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, okay. What am I supposed to do? He said, why don't you just do what I do? And he gave me a little set of instructions. He told me to get a job and go to work. And by this time, my wife has come back and got the little girl. I'm about a year sober, 2 years sober, and I'm trying to work in the oil fields, and I'm not doing a very good job at it because I don't know how to do nothing but play dominoes and hurt people. And I was offered by the warden of the institution I came out of, who watched me make this transformation while in a penitentiary. He invited me to a symposium at a place in Norco, which is an old naval hospital, was being converted into an institution. And so I went out there, and I was supposed to... The theme of the symposium was the role of the offender in treatment. And what they offered me was a job in the parole department. And I have a little desk in Huntington Park with my little name tag on it, so I'd know who I was in the morning when I went in there. And my assignment was going to be this, that I was going to take some of the guys from my neighborhood who I'd grown up with into AA meetings. And then I was supposed to write a report on what we did at the meetings and whether they went or not. And I didn't quite sit well with me, but they offered me something. They offered me $1,000 a month. They offered me a company car, a state car. So could you imagine me running around with a state vehicle? That'll scatter them in my neighborhood if you got there. I'll tell you that. Here he comes. And so the thing that saved my life, which is a set of circumstances in my life that have always been my life, it's things that I've had to be put in a position to be acceptable, but to accept is why this thing is going on. And my assignment was I was committed to drive Myrtle to a meeting that night because she rode buses to get to her meetings. And so I picked her up and I put her in a car, and I got this old rattletrap car that don't make it half the places I'm going to. And I said, you know what, Mom? Guess what, Mom? I said, it won't be long now, Mom, till I have a nice car we can go to meetings in. It won't be long now, Mom, until I can just work 8 to 5 and come pick you up and drive you to nighttime meetings, and I can drive you to the institution, I can drive you back to Tehachapi, I can drive you back to all these places. I'd be able to do all these things that I'm not capable of doing now. And she said, my God, honey, that sounds great. What are you going to do? I told her. And she thought for a while. And she said, I'd like to ask you a couple questions. I said, well, sure, Mom, anything. What do you want? She said, how do you sell a gift? Particularly if the gift isn't yours. I had to go back the next day and report to this committee that I would be glad to come and talk to the convicts after I got off of work in the oil fields every day. I guess I might have been able to ride AA all the way to the state capitol to the parole board, but I wouldn't have lived long enough to do it. You see, I believe this is God's gift to me, to carry the message for the alcoholic who still suffers. I believe that's the only reason I'm breathing in and out. It's the only reason I was given a Norm Alpe and a Chuck Chamberlain and a Clancy Ellison in my life and a host of these young men who've been so important to me. They've been my own family, these kids. These kids of mine are closer to me than my own kids are. I don't have any loyalty because of an accident of birth. I have loyalty to the love of one alcoholic for another. I have never regretted that, and I have never had to do without anything. I've had the greatest education in Alcoholics Anonymous by some of the finest teachers who's ever walked into these rooms. And I continue to be completely hypnotized by the magnificent power of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every Monday night in my home group, there's a line of at least 150 or 200 people standing in a greeting line that stretches all the way. It'd be around this wall if you went to it. So we put our new people. We just throw them in there. And I get to go through their greeting line every Monday night. I wait till it's full before I go. And then I go down and I shake hands with all of them. And I watch the magnificent power of God and Alcoholics Anonymous infiltrate their lives into these new people. To watch this light come on inside of them, to see them change their attire, to want to be a part of something, even though they don't know what it is they want to be a part of, to see them smile when you recognize, and they recognize that you recognize them and you know their name. It's the most magnificent thing that I ever saw in my life. To watch this and to realize what has happened for Free and for Fun here. These people have no concept what kind of a faith that God had before them. We have no concept. I used to say to my sponsor, I asked Papa all the time, what am I supposed to do in AA, Papa? What's my job? And he said, they'll let you know. I said, who let me know? He said, they will. They'll ask you to do things. He said to me one time, we want you to stand as delegate to New York. I said, no. He said, what? You're going to say no to me? I said, no, I didn't say no to you. I said, no, I'm not going to stand for delegate to New York. He said, well, what if they elect you? I said, you didn't say that. If they elect me, I'll serve. You asked me to stand for something. We don't do that here in AA. There isn't anything in Alcoholics Anonymous that the newest person in this room can't do. And if we have a job where they can't do it, we ought to get rid of it. Because it has no purpose here. The joy and experience of what I have been able to do through the directions of my sponsor, my Papa Chuck, in Alcoholics Anonymous, is the joy that I sleep well with at night. It's the joy that I see emerging from these newcomers in that greeting line every Monday night. It's the willingness to sit and separate principles before personalities. Because I have principles. I don't have to like the personality. I don't have to agree with the personality. I don't have to do anything. But I have to respect the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous that are ingrained in me. More than anything else. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to survive more than anybody on the face of this earth. I wanted to survive. Because not only do I have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, I have kids and families who are like my own families who have children who made me their godfather. I wanted to survive for them. I want Alcoholics Anonymous to be the same today as it was when I walked in here, where there's a bunch of people who cared about this program, who cared about carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous for Free and for Fun, who had no other alternative motive for Alcoholics Anonymous. They weren't trying to go anywhere. They were just trying to be of service to God and to the people about them. That's what I want Alcoholics Anonymous always to remain here. I always wanted to remain a haven for the suffering, not a showcase for the contented. Come on, that's what these social gatherings become. They walk around and strut around here like, you know, like they got a cob up their butt or something, for God's sake. They just, what's one guy here, what's one person got here that the other person doesn't have? Aren't we all just trying to stay sober a day at a time? Aren't we all trying to get a little closer to this power, this God that we discovered sitting in meetings about? Aren't we always trying to get a little more of God's love through us to some other human? Isn't that what we're here about? We're not here to sit and judge the speakers or who's doing this or what. It ain't none of my business what any of you do. None whatsoever. You can do whatever you want to do. There's certain things I can't do because I'm an alcoholic. I can't have a spiritual weight on my shoulders. It has to be free and flowing here for me to survive here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It can't be covered up with some type of an outside activity that bothers me. It just got to be for free and for fun. It's got to be the great joy to be with you. Because nowhere in God's world do I ever feel more closer to my God than I am with you. Nowhere in God's world do I ever feel the presence of my Papa Chuck than I do when I'm sitting with you. Nowhere in God's world do I ever hear the word you say to me, "Son, I love you, and you're my boy, and you always will be." He said to me one time, "I love you, son, and there ain't a damn thing you can do about it." And that's what I'm saying to you this morning. I love you people, and there ain't a damn thing you can do about it. And I hope as long as I'm able to stand up and look you in the eye and see the blessings that God has bestowed on you and to recognize it because he's bestowed on me, I'll always be aware that we're all equal in God's eyes. Until that day comes, I hope we'll forever be in peace. Thank you very much for having me.
This recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.